So, Reed, what do you think about the fact that Facebook is getting rid of likes as a way of measuring success?
I have two thoughts. One is I'm glad I don't have to measure that anymore as a marketer. And the other half of me is like, for what reason? We're just everybody, just no one wants to hurt anybody's feelings. Like, it's just going to be a big world of neutral before long. I feel like we're all moving towards beige.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. So thank you for joining us.
And welcome to episode number 139 of Touchpoint. I am Reed Smith. That is Chris Boyer, back for another week.
Yeah, another great week ahead of us.
So we are talking about digital as always today, but maybe in a little bit of a different context. So this should be kind of an interesting conversation. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people, especially in the people doing it, quote unquote, on a day-to-day basis. This should be a fun one. Before we get started or dive in too far, quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. Also, if you would, rate, review, subscribe out there on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening. Still the best way other folks find out about us, and we certainly appreciate that. Would love it if you would rate and review us. That really is a cool thing and makes us feel good about ourselves.
Hit the like button if you could, too.
Yeah, exactly. We very much appreciate that. Appreciate the support, everybody reaching out on the various social platforms, and our sponsors. So let's take a quick pause here, and then we'll be back with the show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. In the last email that we sent out, in our weekly email that we did, I think you put in an article about marketing technology fails. And I read that article, and then I've actually been thinking about it in my day-to-day job. We're building kind of a digital transformation strategy. It kind of kept coming up and up again and again that strategy, digital strategy in particular, is a little bit hard for us in health systems.
It is. And I think a lot of it, especially in the context of that article, I think when we're talking about the technology side of the equation, is we let the technology drive the strategy, you know, versus the other way around, right? And we've talked about this a lot here on recent episodes about shiny object syndrome, and feel like we're, you know, we're missing out on an opportunity if we don't do this thing that we heard somebody speak about at a conference or whatever. So we're kind of going backwards in a lot of cases.
Well, I wouldn't say we're going backwards. I mean, that assumes that we were there at one point, right? I think that traditionally, in that, not to speak poorly about us in healthcare, I think we really have very good intentions with what we're doing. But I think just in general, digital strategy is a little bit difficult within a hospital or health system.
It is, I think, and this is some of my opinion, is because we're still in this maturing in this space, right? Quite a bit. And so a lot of what we're talking about, people don't really understand sometimes. You know, a lot of glazed eyes, and you know, people are like, I'm not really sure. And then too, you know, it's just a push towards activity. You know, activity looks like success.
that really is something that I've noticed, is that we all want to be strategic, but oftentimes we're not incented to be strategic. For us, results is how we measure success. And so it's very natural for us to get into that rhythm of just doing things, getting things done, get that website launched, get, our social media content pushed out, whatever it may be. It becomes very important that sometimes we get lost in that execution mode, that we don't have time to stop back and really understand if we're being strategic or not. There's probably other reasons too. What have you found, Reed, in your experience that might be the reason why it's hard for us to be strategic?
Well, and I know I'm guilty of this from time to time, but I'll nerd out around a platform or a piece of technology or the numbers or analytics or something like that, right? All of a sudden you realize you spent all morning creating a dashboard, and what it's telling you is that like 31 visitors came from like the Gazette or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, oh, all right. So what do we do with that? We just kind of get lost in this idea of like, oh, look what I can find out. And look what this tool can do. And oh my gosh, did you know these things hook together? And, it's just kind of like I think about if this, then that, that platform or whatever. When I think about this, it's because you can get lost on there being like, oh my goodness, like there's a algorithm on here that'll turn on my front porch lights when the pizza delivery guy's on the way. You get lost in this like wave of nonsense around, stuff that is not really terribly impactful for really what you need to be spending your time doing.
And that whole pizza delivery light thing, that is a feature of, let's say, a home security system. You're losing track of the fact that this is really a home security system. Another thing I've noticed in all the organizations I've worked with or even consulted with, and this is even outside of the hospital realm, it's very hard to draw a line between corporate strategy and digital execution, because quite often the people that are way at the very top, they have these big lofty goals about what they want to do, but it's very hard for those of us on the front line or even like once removed, maybe a couple levels up, for us to look at that aligned digital strategy that aligns with corporate goals.
You're making it's a pretty long roadmap in most cases from like a strategic system level initiative to like marketing execution, much less digital marketing execution. So there's a lot of steps and minutiae between those. And so sometimes it is hard, right? Like the effort wanes by the time, you get to, some of the executions, if you will. And so trying to roll that up into the marketing strategy that supports the overall organization strategy is sometimes hard. And it's hard from an energy standpoint because of things like, we're just, every hospital I deal with, everyone's always in a meeting, always. And so we've already solidified the fact that there's not enough of us to do all the work, that you have to rely on people like me, vendors, which is not bad necessarily, but there's not enough hours in the day, there's not enough people to do the work. And if the people we do have are always in meetings, what's that doing for us?
Yeah, well, it certainly is eating away at the fact that we don't have the time to allocate to think about the strategy or to, align towards what that strategy is. In the interview later on in this episode, it's you're going to go really deep with Jackie. Here's another thing too, Reed, that I found. It's not only that it's hard to draw that line between digital strategy and all the way up to the top, there are other departments that are siloed in there too. Recently, I was starting to work on developing digital metrics to support, to measure patient experience, right? Okay, so that sounds very simplistic, right? If you're working digital with health systems, you know what that looks like, right? You're trying to make your website a little bit more improved. Maybe you're streamlining the amount of phone numbers you have on your website or improving the way they can access online appointment scheduling or even, get to their MyChart or whatever it may be, right? To me, it's a very much, oh yeah, okay, I understand the measurements of patient experience. Well, then I went and met with our system-wide patient experience team, and they looked at me like, what do you mean? This is not how we're measuring patient experience. How we're measuring patient experience is by our HCAHPS scores or by our, or whatever it might be. So now suddenly I've created all these metrics. I've created all these things that are not aligned to what these other departments are tracking towards. And now I have to spend that extra time and more meetings and everything else to get them up to speed, to at least to start to understand what we do.
That's a fair point, right? There's the internal education all the while with the external influence is changing and changing pretty rapidly. So, you know, what consumers expect out of our organizations and out of us and what we're doing, it's a lot of times, you know, obviously hard to keep up, you know, especially when you, again, this is, I think, where some of the shiny object syndrome thing kind of falls in. But, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, now we should be on TikTok. We should be making videos for TikTok now because that's where millennials are getting their information.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's goofy stuff like that or, you know, realistically trying to keep up. Because again, you know, with hospitals, obviously, you know, we've talked about this and everybody talks about this ad nauseum, but we don't, you know, we're not quick to adopt as an industry. We're always going to be playing catch up. Like that's just a known piece of the puzzle. And that's why it's hard.
Well, I sometimes wonder why we picked this digital profession of ours, right? Why couldn't we have gotten into call centers? Because, you know, not to knock on the call centers, but come on. I mean, you're answering a phone. That's a very finite thing. When you're talking about digital technology, you have all these new tools and these new technologies that are changing all the time. I mean, do we pick the wrong part, the wrong segment of the health system for us to work in? Maybe I'm making too little of the changes that are impacting also the call centers and other things, because certainly consumers' expectations are changing as fast as, if not faster, than the different tools and technologies that are out there. And that's really hard. I mean, it's really hard for us to keep up. No wonder it's easy for us to say that building a digital strategy is very hard to do.
It absolutely is. And I think we've got a couple of articles we want to run through that are going to be really interesting and kind of shed some light on, you know, why projects fail and some things that we can do. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, so let's jump into our first article here. A really great piece from CustomerThink.com. Articles titled, Here's Why Most Digital Transformation Projects Fail. So again, not necessarily healthcare specific. I'm sure this is kind of applicable to many, but got some great stats in here. The first being, and this is a staggering number. I don't know. At some point we get to these numbers and it's like they almost lose effect because they're so big. But anyway, here, all right, 70% of digital transformation initiatives still don't reach their goals, which they say equates to over $900 billion, that's with a B, $900 billion down the drain each year.
That sounds like a lot of money. I'm not sure how they actually can calculate that too. I bet there's probably a lot more than that if you talk about, you know, employee productivity, et cetera. But $900 billion is something you don't want to shake a stick at, that's for sure. So there's a lot of reasons why that could be. Leaders, business leaders, CEOs are focused on digital transformation with laser focus now. You would think that this would be a big cry from every industry saying, we need to get to the bottom of this. What is going on?
I don't think we have done a great job, and I'm thinking on the provider side specifically of healthcare, hospitals and whatnot, of really defining and helping people understand what digital transformation means or like why it's important. In all honesty, I feel like you are going through a digital transformation whether you want to or not, because the consumer's leading that, right? Now, you can choose not to participate in some way, but your organization is transforming.
It's kind of like that statement of like, it's you're changing whether you want to change or not, because it's working. Well, so it was interesting in this article, they mentioned a survey that was done and they focused on European business leaders. I'm not sure why they focused on them, but they said over 2,000 European business leaders were surveyed and they found that 11% still had no plans to create a digital transformation strategy. and only 33% consider their strategies to be well-defined.
What do you think about those numbers? My initial reaction is, while you're kind of formulating your thoughts, my initial reaction is 11% having no plans seems pretty good to me. Maybe that's just from a healthcare perspective. 33% having well-defined strategies actually seems high to me. Again, thinking about hospitals or healthcare or whatever, where do you think the hospital number would fall?
You know, I think that maybe the numbers are switched in hospitals and health systems, right? Where 33% don't have a digital transformation strategy in place right now, and probably 11% consider their strategies well-defined. And even just by saying that, maybe 11% is a little too high.
Well, it's kind of like when you ask people, like, do you have a reputation management plan? Yes, I do. Is it written down? Oh, no. It's like, how do we define some of these things? So like a digital transformation strategy, if we're saying that, yes, we have one and it's well-defined, like, what does that mean? Is it written down? Do we have like a real strategy? Like, is it written down in the sense that like somebody could like go get that and show it to me, or show it to a new employee or something like that? I'd just be curious.
Well, this is back to the whole fact of, you know, strategy versus execution. Here they follow on. They say, additionally, a third of the decision makers have pursued digital transformation projects, and they also reported having to cancel them at a significant cost.
That's good.
Again, it could be down to the way it's documented. It could be down to a lot of the factors that we talked about at the beginning of the show. But they really say that there's four this article puts forward that there's four common reasons digital projects fail. So let's go through these four and see if they resonate with us, Reed.
All right. So the first one is a short-sightedness around the transformation investment itself. I can see that. They even talk about the ease of getting caught up in like the fancy new technology and lose sight of the reason that you're doing it, i.e. the consumer.
But the other point of it, to reinforce this short-sightedness, if you're getting caught up in the technology, 70% of consumers change suppliers to receive better service. So if you're not focusing on that customer service and that customer experience to deliver value, then you're more than likely just investing in technology for technology's sake.
Again, it's the we saw him speak at a conference, and so now I need one of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not saying that's a bad motivator. Maybe you do need it. Anyway, there's just more to it than that, I guess.
The second point that they mention here, too, is that they invest in technology that's more restrictive than transformational. So I've seen this happen, right, where you go and you invest in like an all-in-one solution and it could do everything, right? It can be your CRM for your call center, for your marketing efforts. It could be your chatbot. It could be everything. But the problem is that you're spreading the peanut butter too thin. So it's just okay. It's not the best. And the unfortunate part of it is that technology, that all-in-one technology, it's mediocre because it's trying to do too many things. And moreover, it's not connecting with other types of technology in your tech stack. And then suddenly you're in this world where you've invested a lot in this all-you-can-eat technology, and it's not getting any of the results that you hoped it would get.
You have the promise of the all-in-one. It's that idea, too, that like I liken this to car GPS units. So cars have GPSs in them. Like you can buy a car, it has the little map and all that. Never as good as the one on your phone. People are not making a car around this mapping device that's in the car, but that's a piece of core functionality on a phone. The all-in-one thing is convenient, but not necessarily the best. But the car GPS thing, that's a great example that like now with the integration of Apple CarPlay, you know, the car manufacturers realized that partnering with and giving the right runway for other technology outside of what they're developing is the better user experience. So I think that is a good example, right? So number three on the list here, failure to plan for real life requirements. This is a big one, right? So you think about the idea of technology solving all of your problems. if you don't look at what the impact to the organization is, for example, like you mentioned CRM earlier, what this one's talking to me about is, or what I'm hearing is this idea that, like, you know, CRM was supposed to fix everything. And we had a great conversation with Rachel Neely just a few episodes ago from eVariant. I'm talking about, like, not only is it like not going to eliminate the need for as many FTEs in your organization, you're actually probably going to need more FTEs. You're not planning the right way, or you're misunderstanding or miscalculating what it is that you're going to need from a requirement standpoint to really make it work.
And I'm going to do a little aside here, and not to dig our vendors a little bit, but, you know, some of the vendors out there, they actually misrepresent a little bit about what the functionality that their products can do. And we need to be really careful about that. As strategists, we need to really hone in deeply on these are the requirements we need, the real life requirements we need. And we want to make sure your technology can support that or can address that need. And, you know, oftentimes a good tip that I've done is when you're going through different demos of these different technologies is ask them to show it to you. Show me directly how this works, how this supports this need or whatever it might be, because you want to make sure that it's actually addressing that, not just, you know, putting a lipstick on it, so to speak.
You know, and again, two things there. One, vendors that really provide what it is they say they provide are going to be fine. They'll be just fine. Also, you know this is a need because our good buddy Ed Bennett, who you just heard on a previous episode, has created a whole website, martech.health, to not just know like who does a certain thing from a vendor standpoint, but who does it well. Do, again, as an aside, go check out his website. And if you know, that's a great avenue to connect with other people that are using similar technologies if you're thinking about something. A way you can get some user feedback and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Now, the fourth and final point they have here about one of the four common reasons that digital projects fail, a siloed culture. We've said this before, Reid. We'll say it again over and over again. Digital transformation is not just about digital. It's about your culture. They say here that innovation strategy professor did a study and found that 95% of digital transformation efforts fail due to an inflexible company structure and culture. Silos and uncollaboration within a culture of an organization is the single biggest barrier to innovation. Now, that's not surprising to me. Is it for you?
No. I do think, though, that one... Well, I mean, all of these, I think, will resolve over time just on their own. Not as fast as you need them to, maybe. But that one in particular, I think, potentially has the chance to resolve itself as you get these transformational leaders in place, I guess. And we're starting to see more and more of that, certainly.
Well, leadership certainly will help set the culture and drive that culture down to the organization. And it has to be a culture that is actually very conducive of innovation, where employees are encouraged to take risks. And in the health systems I work at, or I've worked at, that is certainly not first and foremost as part of the culture. It's more of a safety culture. So I think we have a long ways to go in health systems.
We do. And I think, you know, we still have an opportunity. And again, I think the folks listening to this podcast are in a place to really affect or impact that change too.
One of the last things that we'll touch on is one last article, Reid, that's called Why Digital Transformations Fail. But really, the reason why we want to focus on this is because the author outlines three steps you can't skip in order to be successful with your digital strategy. So it's easy. These three steps, they say it's easy to list them, but it's harder to execute on them. And the first one is one about committed ownership. What does that mean to you, committed ownership?
Well, I mean, I think certainly there has to be somebody in charge. I think that's the simplest, you know, way to say it. But, and I think too, that person has to have enough pull within the organization to actually move that initiative.
It helps for them to have a seat at the C-suite table. The author here indicates that digital is a non-negotiable responsibility of the CEO and the board. And so you do need to have a person there that at the C level that helps to translate business goals into digital strategy. And oftentimes CEOs and the board, they just can't be that way. Another thing about that role that you kind of outlined, or that ownership that you outlined, is barrier busting. right? Is someone that is really good at helping to negotiate very complex, siloed, and, you know, as we said before, maybe non-flexible organizations. Well, this person's role should be, or this team's role should be, around how do you bust the barrier in a way that the organization can respond to that and actually start to innovate.
The second one, strategy sufficiency. I think this is an interesting one where you've got to have the ability to generate enough sufficiency, as they call it, in terms of numbers of ideas, as well as the portfolio sufficiency to turn some of them into actual success. And they talk about a Google-inspired kind of portfolio model, which I think is really interesting. I don't know that I've ever seen this or heard this stated this way, but at Google, 70% of the organization's effort goes into like daily operations. Makes sense. 20% on continuous improvement, and then the final 10% on disruption. That's an interesting way to look at, from a strategy standpoint, how do you define for the organization the way this works and how to be disruptive and how to kind of move that narrative along through the organization.
You know, I think I'm going to go through my Outlook calendar next week and just block out 10% of my time on disruption. Maybe that'll be on a Friday afternoon. What do you think?
I would like that, is like people look at my calendar internally and they'd be like, hey, what is Reed available? He's apparently in disruption Thursday at that time.
I mean, I really believe strongly. I never heard this. I've heard that Google has this culture, but the 70-20-10 rule is really good. I'll start to figure out how I'm going to implement that in my day-to-day workplace with my team as well. The last point they mention here is effective change management. Reed, we haven't talked a lot about change management. We kind of have, I guess, along the way, but there is a critical stage between successful innovation and scaling. And the author calls that the innovation valley of death. And that's where most great innovations die. And it's because of a lack of change management. Have you ever found yourself in the innovation valley of death?
That seems dramatic. I'm going to start naming things just randomly, you know, stuff like that, and just use them in talks that I do. No, innovation valley of death. No, absolutely. Because I think you run the risk as someone doing that disruption that you get far enough outside of the culture, or maybe not outside, but out in front of the culture, that you stall out.
Well, they say there's three different types of change management strategies. Uh-oh. You don't only have to worry about digital transformation strategies now. Uh-oh. You also have to worry about change management strategies. Here's where the three this author outlines. Organic change, where it just happens organically. Uh-huh. I think organic change also often is inspired from within. It maybe is, if you have a customer first mentality, those are some great ways to do it. Edge organization structures and inorganic change. So edge organization structures are where you actually create an organization that's on the edge, that's focused on change management, like your PMO office maybe.
Okay.
And they come in and their job is to change things. And then the inorganic change, which they actually indicate that inorganic change is necessary when either of the first two strategies is an issue and doesn't work.
This is interesting because I feel like you get to a place that some of this stuff is hard to interpret and figure out, okay, that's super, but like, now what do I do? Gosh, change management is an interesting one in the sense that we do it in other parts of the organization for other reasons, like M&A, you know, like post-merger acquisition or something like that, where you're forced into a change management cycle. I think the difference here is at least we feel like we're not forced into that model.
Yeah. Well, I think that we should feel like we're forced in that model if we don't bring on that internal change mantra ourselves. Unfortunately, I think that, you know, like I said about measurement, right? Our successors will be much better at change management if we aren't. So I just think that's something that we have to start to adapt to, and we have to become we all have to embrace change more effectively, along with developing articulated strategies, which leads us to the interview.
Absolutely. So excited to have Jackie Martin back on the show. She's been on before. Super thoughtful conversation around strategy and also vision. and kind of how to get out of the weeds tactically and think about what you should be doing as a marketer in your organization.
Well, why don't we give her a listen right after this little break?
We're back with the Ask the Expert portion of the podcast, and today I am very fortunate to be joined once again. You have been on the show before, right?
Yeah.
Jackie Martin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For those that are not familiar with your background or kind of what you're doing on a daily basis, why don't you fill us in a little bit with what you've been up to lately?
18 months ago, I became an independent consultant coming out of a large agency world with a lot of big consumer brands. My heart was always healthcare. It's been a lot of fun to help marketers become a lot more patient-centric and better identify their priorities and kind of how to tackle all of the things that they're trying to get done at the same time.
You've had a lot of fun projects with some big organizations around the country. And so I think this conversation is going to be really interesting. And I know we're talking about strategy and kind of vision setting, things like that. We've traded some notes on LinkedIn and email and otherwise. And I think one thing that you brought up, which I'd like to kind of start with here, is typically when we're thinking about strategy or, you know, working on a strategy, it's the how, and we get into tactics pretty quick. But you made a mention of like the who and what versus the how. Can you talk about that for just a second, kind of set the stage?
The number one indicators that a project's going to fail is when the business side starts and immediately jumps into how we are going to accomplish whatever it is we need to accomplish. And so you see this a lot, especially when trying to execute in the digital world, and we'll get really set on these tactics. And it can be anything from technology choices. It can be focusing way too much on design. And we kind of fall into these traps where we'll walk out of a meeting arguing icon styles for 2 hours. And then at the end of the day, when everything launches, we fail to understand like what in the world happened. Like what I'm seeing on the screen did not match what I had in my head. And it was like, well, what went wrong? And typically that comes all the way back to strategy and having it where we got way too into the how too quickly instead of forcing ourselves to stop and say, wait, what are we doing here? Who is this for? And that process, when we mess it up, is almost always the cause of that end result just not being what we thought it was supposed to be.
I see this a lot. Or I've seen it a lot over the years, I guess, when, you know, we need a new website or we need a CRM or whatever it is. You know, people have gone to kind of the end point to start, you know, which is I need this thing. Not that they haven't thought through or at least to some degree, like why they need a new website. But I don't know that it's just kind of a foregone conclusion. Like I need this new website. And for a while there, a few years back, it was the phones and tablets, right? It was, you know, the website's not responsive, so we need a new one, which, yeah, okay. I mean, I get it, but I think that was like enough of a green light that it was like, you know, here we go, pick a CMS and build a new website. And this, you know, and so we've blown past the idea of, you know, what did we need?
It's often not a new website. And it's tough because when you go in and you're very tactic based, you're really at the mercy of your technology team or agency partner or whoever is pitching to you. Well, what bells and whistles do they have? Because if you come in with that idea, like, well, we need a new website or we need a new CMS or whatever it is, that thing in front of you, it shifts the power the wrong direction. And so as a business owner, and when we talk about a business owner, we're saying the person who should be driving the what and the who. So it's like, what are we doing this? Why are we doing it? What do I need this to do? And when that business owner starts to define the tactics first, you're giving that power to the technology. So you're really at the mercy of whoever it is that's building it for you, because they're going to say, well, you know, here's this dog and pony show. The CMS is going to solve all your problems. And then you're like, yes, it is. And then they build it. And, you know, sometimes it's $2, $3, $4, $5 million later. You're like, this is not what we needed. But because you didn't first say, I need this to do what for my patients, and base that against the technology, that's where you start to see, you know, just so much time, money wasted, and you're kind of stuck with this different version of your same problem that you had before.
Chris and I have talked a lot about this on recent episodes, but this shiny object syndrome, right? And you go to conferences and you see somebody present and you're like, man, we need that thing, or we need to do that, whatever they just did. And maybe you do, I don't know. But the idea of, you know, understanding yourself and who you're trying to connect with and how they need to, you know, there are a lot of similarities, don't get me wrong, across hospitals and healthcare, but it doesn't, you know, they're not just carbon copies, right? Like, you can't just take what someone else did and plant it somewhere else. Some of the technologies, sure, maybe, but in what order and do you need them? And even being ready for some of the technologies. So maybe you do need a CRM.
You know, I had a client who signed with a new vendor with a third-party tool. And what it did is it created for the digital marketing team an additional data entry point, because they built this completely separate database managed by the vendor, but the hospital still had to provide that data. And there was really no clean way to do it. You know, the vendor typically doesn't really care what your internal data looks like. They need to get their data somehow in some way. And so whether that is a new API or manual entry to manage this. And so when you have like new physicians coming on board, it ended up being on this marketing team to try to manage this data. And it was, again, that short-sighted thing. It's like, yes, I think this vendor could have been a great fit for you, but it was at the wrong time, because you had to look at what were you going to be putting on your teams to do. Is that really a good use of their time? Is the value for the patient worth the cost? Or is there a different way you could go about doing this? You know, there is no magic button oftentimes to fix these problems. And so we tend to avoid, you know, the most complicated things. It comes back to what's driving us. And that's where that vision comes into play, because with a correctly defined vision, we can correctly prioritize all the things that we want to get done. And it helps us see it.
So talk more about that. Like, you know, I don't think we talk about vision much in marketing and communications, at least. We're pretty quickly into the tactics and onto the next meeting and that kind of stuff. So where does vision fit within all of this?
Well, I think that you have, you know, typically a marketer will have their goals. And so really talking specifically to a hospital marketer, you're going to have your business goals. Like, what are you supposed to be doing? You know, there may be three or four, hopefully not too many more things that the hospital is pushing for as a collective organization. And then you have to make that applicable to what you're responsible for. And so those are kind of two different levels of vision. You have the overall vision for your organization, which most folks that listen to this podcast aren't going to be responsible for, but they are going to be getting. And then you have your vision for your marketing. And that to me is where we can get a little bit off base, because we'll say, all right, we got to go after and, you know, grow this particular service line, or we need to be, you know, helping patients in this way. And so it has to be this thing over here that will solve it. And it's stopping and saying, no, what does this mean for my organization, this marketing group? And how am I going to define this end vision? And then what goals fall under that vision? And then what tactics fall under those goals? And the biggest thing I see here is that we just don't take time to write it down. And it's funny, because as a consultant, a lot of times all I do is listen and then write things down for my clients.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, you know, in a nutshell, that's what I do, because we oftentimes know. It's not that I ever come to a client and have this like groundbreaking idea. Oftentimes we have it in our head. It's just not organized and it's not written down, and that makes it really tough to execute against. So thinking about like your health, for example, you have a vision. Like, I envision myself, I want to be, you know, that 85-year-old grandma who like is just healthy and dresses however she wants to, right? Because she's 85 and she can just get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
But she's out and living and enjoying life. That's my vision, is I want to be healthy and I want to live as long as I can to be with my family. And then I'm going to have goals that would help me meet that. I don't want to get type 2 diabetes that runs in my family. You know, I want to put good food in my body. Those are going to be goals that I have. And then my tactics are, well, I probably should log my food. I'm going to download this MyFitnessPal app and log my food. But if I go in and I'm just like, man, I got to get healthy, and I just start logging my food, it's not going to really be that effective, because I'm not going to sustain to that vision that I see that's very personal, because I'm envisioning this awesome grandma, but I'm also envisioning, you know, my kids as adults, or my great, you know, God willing, great grandchildren, or whoever it is that vision that's going to drive me to meet my goals, which are attainable steps in front of me, which then different tactics I can implore to meet those goals. So maybe that app tracker ends up not working and I'm going to go try something else. It's just a different tactic, but my vision doesn't change. And that's really the best way to describe this, is that we just don't ever take the time to define it. And so you will be going towards a vision, but your colleague will have a different vision in his or her head. And because you never take the time to write it down, you're kind of working on towards a different visions that you may not have intended. And then that's kind of where things go off base.
So when you're defining vision, how are we getting distracted on the hows? Like, why is that happening?
A couple things I see is we don't trust our implementation partner. You have an internal team. Maybe you think your website looks ugly. I mean, this is super practical, right? You just don't like it. And so you're going to really hone in on things that don't matter, but you have a passion for. So if you are implementing a new site search to try to make it voice capable, for example, you know, you're going to get hung up on, if you don't trust who is leading that or who is designing it or the logic behind it, you're going to get way too much in the details and micromanage it, trying to control that outcome.
What if that is driving the control? I mean, do you feel like it's people don't have enough confidence in what it is that that's going on, that they're having to resort back to what they know? I mean, as far as like, you know, hey, if I'm not in the middle of this every day, like we're showing success through busyness in a lot of cases, right? Like I'm super busy. Look at all these meetings I go to. Is that kind of what this is to some degree? Like we don't know what else to do sometimes, is like, especially some of the folks that have been in these roles for a long time.
Well, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because typically if you don't trust the people implementing it, it's because they don't know your vision. They're also trying to just survive and show value, you know, in their competency and their job. And so there's always bad apples, but for the most part, people are trying to do good work. And so they're going off and doing it and coming back to you, and you're frustrated because what you have in your head is not what you're seeing down on paper. And this is why it's weird. Websites are this weird thing that happens with people in terms of it's the place they can go to see what's in their head out in the world. And so they go and they'll see like this comp or the final product, and it's frustrating if it doesn't match. And so if you as the business owner don't write down your vision and write down the goals, then the people implementing it are going to go guess that. And it may be subconscious, it may be intentional, but somebody has to decide that. And so it's that self-fulfilling prophecy that you don't trust who's implementing, because you never explained to them your vision. And then you never trusted them to implement your vision. And so then you're going to go get into the details to maintain that control. And you just see that dynamic happen a lot. And it's unfortunate because it just leads to that frustration. And then the end result of, wait a second, this digital marketing project did not end up how I wanted it to. And then now you have even more distrust in your implementation team. And that cycle just continues.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And I think a lot of times we do start out like I think a lot of people do have at least what they would think is a vision, right? But to your point, it's not written down anywhere. No one's really, you know, verbalizing that in a in a way that they can drive that point with their teams.
And it allows you to like recalibrate, because we all know that once you get into the project, it is easy to get. I mean, I care about icons. I care about all these things. But when we have a vision, so to make it practical, if you're trying to increase online appointment scheduling, that's one of the goals that the marketing department has identified. And so for this project, right, you have to identify, well, what is the vision for this? So I could go in and really micromanage this and say, okay, guys, we're going to, you know, make the button really big, or it should be, I read this article last week and it should be, you know, orange and in the upper right hand corner, and like really go in and try to do that. Or you could say, you know, no, our goal is to increase patients going online. Let's go first out and talk to patients about why they're not using it. Let's go to patients. Let's unify and create a patient first vision. And then this designer and developer and agency partner, whoever you're working with, is now going to be able to, they're buying into this idea that it's patient first. And it really allows you to unify the business and technology sides of whatever your combination looks like.
In that case, you know, the vision is, you know, we want to create an online presence to engage, you know, consumers or whatever. And part of that may be scheduling. Part of it may be, maybe it is a new website or whatever it is. But again, I don't think anybody's keeping that vision front and center. I say anybody, that's probably kind of broad, but a lot of people are not keeping that front of mind. And I'm almost saying it to myself, really, quite honestly. I'm thinking about some of the work that I'm doing. Understanding the why will help the team. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's the point. Here's why we exist to the organization and things like that, I think are all interesting conversations we probably don't have, especially as the, you know, marketing has evolved over the last several years to be, you know, less or not, maybe not less, but not just an advertising department.
You have to really understand technology now in a way that you never have had to do that before. And so marketing is attracting people with a bunch of different backgrounds, which is great. But yes, it can become more problematic. And I think it really is so helpful for the team to have these conversations, because it does keep you all on the same page, but it also allows for clear responsibilities to be defined. So who is responsible for the strategy? And then who is responsible for implementation? Because it can go the other way also. You can have a rogue implementer who's like, I don't really care what the vision is. I'm going to go with what I think is right. And that's an equally dangerous place to be. And so a vision unifies a team, but it also allows you to identify those roles and responsibilities at the project kickoff. And so there is really no question in terms of what is this doing? How is this going to help our business? What goal does this fall under? How does this align to our vision? And then who's responsible for what? That ability to write things down and to identify roles and responsibilities at project kickoff, ensure everybody understands it, is another way to really help you be successful.
As we're kind of thinking about vision setting and strategy and those types of things, people listening in, what is something they can go do today? Is there a conversation to be had? Is there a exercise they can do? What's a good takeaway or a good first step for folks that are thinking like, I'm not sure I've done any of this. You know, I mean, what should they do first?
The first thing is it's not bad. I mean, you're not bad. I don't think I've ever run into somebody who's like, I don't want to be strategic. I'm going to be tactic focused. I mean, we don't go to work for that. And so it's not, you know, you didn't get here because you're like malicious. It happens because we get busy, and doesn't make you, you know, incompetent at your job. But I think there's such a great, easy way to fix this, which is, you know, what do you have on your plate right now? And at the beginning of your next, you know, if you meet Wednesday afternoons for a status meeting, pause for the first 10 minutes and just be like, hey guys, I wanted to, you know, I realized that I didn't set the stage when we started this project. And I just wanted to briefly talk through, you know, how are the things that we're doing right now, that we're building, that we're writing, that we're, you know, whatever it is, a campaign, a new website or an enhancement? How does this help us meet our goals? And then how is that goal aligned under the vision that we all, you know, live under as employees or as an agency partner? And just use those 10 minutes. And it never fails. I have gotten messages from developers, you know, they're writing code and they're like, hey, that was so helpful, because they're not exposed to that. They don't get to go to the meetings that we go to. And, you know, it really can help your team see why they're doing what they're doing. And it helps us. It builds our confidence as a team. It can get us excited as a team. It's like, how is what we're doing helping the patient? And I think that just ensuring, not assuming, but ensuring that your project team is aligned under this unified purpose will really surprise you how much it will help everybody.
That's so great. That's really, really great advice. For folks that would love to connect with you, pick your brain further, learn more about you and the work you're doing, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Jackie Martin on LinkedIn. Email me at jackie.martin@branchstrategy.com. Or you can head over to branchstrategy.com and kind of get to know who I am and what I do a little bit better there.
Awesome. And we'll link to all that stuff in the show notes. But we appreciate the time and love having you on from time to time. So excited. Hopefully we can talk you into coming back on in the future.
No, I loved it. I appreciate the conversation, Reed. I nerd out on this stuff. So it's always a blast. So I appreciate it.
Thanks again. Special thanks to Jackie Martin for joining us again. Really, really appreciate her. Check out the show notes if you'd like to connect with her over on LinkedIn or by email. Let's, if we will, jump in, talk a little bit about where we're going to be here in the short term before we get to recommendations. Chris, while you're flipping over to that, quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health again. Rate, review, subscribe wherever you happen to be listening. We certainly appreciate it. All right. Where are we next?
Well, you're coming up to my lovely state up here in the north, Minnesota.
That's right.
At the end of October, October 22nd and 23rd, it's coming up in a few weeks here, Reed, will be the 2019 Mayo Clinic Social Media Network's annual conference at the Mayo Clinic campus in Rochester, Minnesota. We love that campus. We've been there. In fact, you were there just 2 years ago on this particular day, weren't you?
On this very day, I was there. Meeting with Lee Acey. Well, I mean, I was, but that's not really why I was there. But you got married a couple of years ago about this time.
That's right. We didn't get married at the conference. It just happens to fall at this time now.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Like people do like at a Major League Baseball game or something. I should have just gotten married at the conference.
This year's promises to be not as good as our wedding, but, you know, nearly as good. So it's going to be a day and a half of really great in-depth content around not only social media. There's going to be information about content marketing. There's going to be things about digital. Reed, you're going to be doing something about reputation management. And by the way, you posted a survey on LinkedIn. If it's still up, have people jump out to your LinkedIn and take that survey.
That would be great.
I'm going to be doing something about digital strategy. Hey, ironically enough, we talked about it in this episode. And you and I are going to be recording a podcast. And the guests on the podcast, the panelists, are going to be all the people that manage Mayo Clinic social media accounts day in and day out. And we're going to pick their brains for how do they do their job so well and what are some of the newest things that they're looking at. So you cannot miss it. You got to come.
Can't miss it. Links in the show notes, or you can just go to socialmedia.mayoclinic.org. And then shortly after that, just a couple of weeks later, we'll be down in sunny Orlando, Florida at the Healthcare Internet Conference 2019 edition over hcic.net's the website. It's always a good time.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And we're going to be there in full force, you and I. And we're going to be, if you seek us out, we might be eating alligator because you promised you'd eat alligator with me this time around.
What? I don't remember this conversation. I mean, I will. It's fine. Do I get a pair of boots as well? Is it like the grocery store where like you pick it out of the tank?
I'll have that one. Anyway, those are the two major conferences we have on deck for this year, because really the conference season kind of wraps up in mid-November. But if you know of an opportunity you'd like Reed or I to be at, reach out to us. Let us know, because we certainly want to make sure that the Touchpoint podcast is at those conferences that are relevant to us.
That's right. And be sure to, if you'd like to connect with us on a more regular basis, we have a weekly email that comes out. You can sign up for the TPS report over at touchpoint.health as well. Comes out every Monday. All right, let's do some recommendations. What do you have this week?
Reed, I'm going to recommend an app that I just recently downloaded. It just came out. Are you a fan of Mario Kart?
Yeah, sure.
Nintendo just released their Apple iOS app for Mario Kart. Wow. And I downloaded it. And I'm telling you, they adapted it well to a mobile phone. I'm a big fan of Mario Kart. Always played Mario Kart growing up and also with, you know, friends, and, you know, happen to have a Switch as well. Well, now I have it on my phone. And they adapted it really well to a mobile device. The races are pretty short. They're two laps long. You could play it with one hand. So while you're waiting in line at the bank or wherever you wait in the line at, right? Don't play it while you're driving. But when you just need something to pass the time for 30 seconds, 60 seconds or whatever, pull open the Mario Kart. You have racing. You have all the characters. You kind of have a point system, all that. And it's totally free. It's a lot of fun. And it just brings back all the feels of the nostalgia of playing Mario Kart growing up.
Nice. I have to go check that out. I'm going to recommend another podcast from our good friends over at Gimlet Media, makers of brilliant podcasting content. There's a show called Heavyweight. I may have recommended this before, but it would have been way back. So I'm going to recommend it again because season 4 of Heavyweight just came out. Heavyweight, the about line is Jonathan Goldstein goes back to the moment everything changed. And so the idea here is host Jonathan Goldstein connects with people and helps solve some mystery from their past, basically. One really funny one from season 3, he was talking to a guy who as a kid broke his arm, right? He's like 10, 12 years old, breaks his arm. Everyone in his family thinks he's made this up. And he's like, I swear I broke my arm. Like, why does no one believe me? You know, kind of a thing. And so he figures that out. Season 4 just came out. The first episode of season 4, I believe, actually came out just a few days ago. It's actually called Jimmy and Mark. And so it's about this kid named Jonathan Marshall, who when he was 10 years old, which has now been 45 years ago. So when he was 10 years old, was sent by his parents on a 240-mile bicycle trip for 3 days across 2 states with no adult supervision.
What?
Well, he made this trip with 3 other kids who he has not spoken to since. And so the idea is that he's going to go find these other kids for this guy. And so they can reminisce about this bicycle trip because no one believes that actually. You know, it's like you tell somebody that as a 55-year-old that when I was 10, I rode 240 miles on a bicycle in 3 days, no adults, and no one believes you. So anyway, it's hilarious. It's a great show. So Heavyweight.
I am going to have to definitely check that out. I actually just subscribed to it in my podcast app.
Yeah, it's really funny.
And going to give it a listen.
All right. Another great week. Another great show. Again, special thanks to all of our sponsors. Special thanks to Jackie Martin. And we love that you listen. So for Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week. This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.